I'm Fahima Sek, and the show is What's at Stake? And we spend an hour with Dr. Yula Gokey as we unpack a year in review on the African continent. All that and a whole lot more. Good morning and welcome. I'm Fahima Sek, and today we will be talking with Dr. Yankala Gokey, professor of philosophy, religion, and Pan-Africanism at Lincoln University. But before we do that, I want to implore you to be sure to pay your pledges as we are embarking upon the heels of our last pledge drive. We can't continue to do this without you. Please be sure to support your station. All right, Dr. Gokey, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Fahima, for the opportunity.
We are going to start out with a host of things that have happened on the continent. Now, you are professor of philosophy, religion, and Pan-Africanism at Lincoln University. And I know you two are a fellow Bison, and your focus and the lens that you view the world in is through a Pan-Africanist lens. So let's talk about Pan-Africanism on the African continent and the things that have transpired. Let's start there.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Pan-Africanism as an ideology, a vision, and then a process. It is about the unity of Africa. The unity of Africa and its people who live on the continent and who live abroad, that people call diaspora. So the movement was articulated since the beginning of the 20th century after the first conference organized by Henry Sylvester Williams. W.B. Du Bois will be one of the first, or maybe the first, theoretician of the concept. And people like Marcus Garvey, even if they did not claim Pan-Africanism, is recorded as a great Pan-Africanist, and Kwame Nkrumah was going to be the one to take the movement to the level of the state. So that phenomenon was in the central part of the decolonization process, the fight against slavery, the fight against apartheid. It's a movement that experiences peaks and valleys. Now we are experiencing a great moment of the Pan-African movement on the continent, and there are several expressions. One at the level of the states of the African Union, because the Agenda 2063, which was articulated by Dr. Zuma, was going to be a turning point in the history of Pan-Africanism, as for the first time, maybe after the moment of valleys, it was going to be claimed by the African leaders. And now, later on, we see that in several African countries, we see the claim or the claiming of Pan-Africanism. So I'm going to start with the alliance states. So we have Burkina Faso, Mali, and then Niger. Those three countries, led by officers, decided to leave ECOWAS, which is the regional body that they consider to be manipulated by the Europeans. And then they embarked on Pan-Africanism, and then many, you know, the continent rallied around them because they talk about sovereignty and unity of Africa. In Senegal, the leader of the political party called PASTEF rose to power, is also claiming Pan-Africanism. And then so we have those three silent states and then Senegal. And then we can talk about the citizen movements. People were opposing constitutional change on the continent, be in Togo, be in Ivory Coast, be in Tanzania, in Kenya, almost in so many places, those who are taken to the streets, they're doing that also in the name of better governance and also in the name of Pan-Africanism. So this is what I can say, and this is what is happening. I want to stop there. So if you want to have a follow-up question, then we can continue.
Everyone was very excited with the election of the Senegalese president, which actually was pursuant to the situation in Burkina Faso. For the past few years, everyone has been optimistic. But let me know exactly, let our listeners know exactly what's going on. Why is there not the enthusiasm as it was the case when the Senegalese president was initially elected?
Okay. Senegal, since the month of April 2024, Senegal is led by a president who is a member of a party called PASTEF. And then he was the second choice, because the first choice of the Senegalese people of that party was Ousmane Sonko, the leader of the party. But because of some laws that prevented him from running, the party decided to do a plan B, and they chose Diomaye Faye, Bassirou Diomaye Faye. So everyone was happy because Ousmane Sonko became the prime minister. So people were excited about the duo of those two young people who wanted to put an end to neocolonialism in Senegal. But the prime minister Ousmane Sonko and the president Bassirou Diomaye Faye, both of them have different approaches when it comes to how to deal with Africa's partners. So Diomaye Faye seemed to have shown some interest in a slow process. First, and number two, they seem to be claiming the preservation of the ties with France. And then many think that, you know, he is making a mistake. The president does the same thing too, but we see Ousmane Sonko leading towards China, for instance, or Turkey. Now, there's a situation that is so strange in the country is that there was a coalition which was put into place when Bassirou Diomaye Faye was running for president. And then after he became president, that coalition with members of the party PASTEF, and some other people who left the former party in power, and they created a coalition for president. And now Diomaye want to continue maintaining that coalition, and he asked a lady to run it, and then to the displeasure of the members of the party, particularly to the displeasure of his prime minister, who is the leader of the party. So that is now people seem to see that both of them want to run for president, and then it's going to become a lot to talk about, and that is a very unpleasant situation in Senegal, while the country is still hurting, and even though there are some measures to reduce the cost of life, but we have not seen a fundamental change of the structure of the economy of Senegal.
I know that so many young people were excited with the election of Faye, you know, because he was someone who represented the future generation, and it's really a disappointment. And I know that a lot of the excitement was because he was a young person who had emerged victoriously. And, you know, the new party was something also that people were excited about. There was energy around the PASTEF party. So does it appear that Fayette is continuing the ties with previous colonial powers?
Yes, that's the impression that people have about him. So he went to France, and then I don't know if it's two times or once, but he went to Ivory Coast. I understand that he has to go and see all the leaders, but at the same time, we don't see him, and we don't even see Ousmane Sonko delivering a speech that can be about the position on the future or the destiny of Africa.
We're listening to Pacifica Radio, WPFW, on your FM dial, streaming at www.wpfwfm.org. And we also have many listeners on the app. And today, my guest is Dr. Yanka Lagoki, professor of philosophy, history, and Pan-Africanism, associate professor, that is, at Lincoln University. He's also a Bison. Hailing also from Howard University. And we're talking about the many things that have happened this past year on the African continent Every year around this time, I bring you a year in review with our distinguished scholar. Now, Dr. Lugocki, everyone has had a great deal of energy about what's been happening in Burkina Faso. So I know that President Thiori has actually averted a number of attempts of assassination, coups, and things of that nature, but there's also been a great deal of innovation and progress. Can you share with those in our listening audience?
Yes, I'm going to talk about that too, but there is another element I wanted to mention, if you don't mind, after I answer this question. Burkina Faso is led by somebody called Captain Ibrahim Traoré. And then he's young, he's in his 30s, mid-30s. And then he's been in power for at least 2 good years, came to power through a coup. Then he showed to the world that he means business. He broke away from France. And then he asked the French soldiers to leave his country. And then he's trying to mobilize funds in order for the country to fund some of the great projects. So this is one thing that he's doing, and then people are excited about it. So there are a couple of companies that are being created under his leadership in order to reinforce the sovereignty of Burkina Faso. And nationalized a gold company in Burkina Faso. And then there are people who have been the guardians, if I can use that expression, of people who are the watchmen of the revolution, thousands of them. He found the opportunity to give them salaries. And so these are some of the things that he's doing. Recently, he was involved or he was dragged into a controversy by the former leader of Africa, the leader of AFRICOM, and then General Langley, who did not like what Traoré was saying. And then during a hearing at the Congress, when they asked him to give an example of a bad leader, and he said that Traoré was a bad leader because, according to what he said, Traoré was using the state funds for his personal safety, his personal security. Many people of African descent support him. And this is how he became the face of the Pan-African movement on the world stage. And so the other thing I wanted to say is that besides what we are seeing in those countries, there are United States countries, like particularly Burkina Faso, the question of reparations has become one of the burning issues on the continent. So Ghana is the leader of that campaign. And then the Togolese government that organized the Pan African Congress also, even though it is about multilateralism, the Congress to put emphasis on reparations. And recently, Algeria organized a conference, Crimes of Colonialism, from November 30th to December the 1st. So these are movements on the continent. And then in that context, what every leader does is seen or watched with scrutiny, and Ibrahim Traoré has become the face of the global Pan-African movement.
Let's talk a little bit about the aligned states, because Burkina Faso was the first, and then there were a number in the region that followed suit and joined BRICS. So let's unpack that a bit.
So I would say that the first country that sparked the revolution, which was going to be followed by Burkina Faso and by Niger, is Mali, under the leadership of General Assimi Goïta. He was the one who asked the Europeans to leave Mali, and then he started like some processes and for sovereignty of Mali, and he gave a sense of pride to many people who wanted to see African leaders breaking away from France. So that was Goïta Mali did at the first. I'm talking about him, but it was a popular movement. After the Malian movement, we saw Burkina Faso under the leadership of Ibrahim Traoré. And then the third country was Niger under the leadership of General Tchiani. So there was, when Tchiani took power in Niger, ECOWAS, activated by France, wanting to go and dislodge Tchadi. So it was thanks to the mobilization of many in Africa and in the world, in the global diaspora, that they did not go and try to use military force to dislodge Tchadi. So that is the situation. But those countries have not left the CFA franc zone. And then I have not read anywhere that they are members of the BRICS nation. But what I know is that they are expressing the spirit of independence vis-à-vis France, and many people welcome that on the continent of Africa.
So I think a lot of the excitement, because I remember when, and this was after President Captain Diori had emerged and, you know, these various attempts of assassination, that there was a global movement in support. I understand that there's a issue with ECOWAS and BRICS. Could you can you unpack that in terms of countries that part of the United States, and where is the stalling? Why is there? Why haven't they moved forward with the transition?
Okay, I'm not sure if I understood the question properly, but what I want to say is that the three African countries in the Sahel states that are conducting a revolution on the continent, it's not like they are doing things with the BRICS and the BRICS as an agency. I don't see that. But what they're doing is that they're reinforcing their ties individually with, for instance, Russia. Okay, so this is what we see. Russia is a founding member of the BRICS, but Russia is not dealing with them as a member of the BRICS, but as a country, as a sovereign nation, which is Russia, just to give that example. So this is what we are seeing in Africa.
I understood that there was a issue with ECOWAS, and there were some countries that were moving away from ECOWAS. And now maybe I have I don't quite understand. Can you just unpack that?
That they're moving away from ECOWAS?
Yes, that's what I understood.
Yes. The issue is simple. ECOWAS is a regional body for West Africa, which means economic community of West African states. It was created in 1975. It has been in force for 50 years. But one thing that people have noticed is that when the leaders were in power, when they changed the constitutions, which usually limit the terms to two, in order to run for the third and fourth time, so it becomes an issue. So when this happened in Ivory Coast, because the current president of Ivory Coast, Mr. Ouattara, he just won the election and is going for his fourth term. So Patrice Talon in Benin, who was experienced like a failed coup d'etat, said that he's leaving the second term. But at the same time, people who are observing politics in Benin say that he's leaving without leaving. So it was in that context of the fight against neocolonialism and against terrorism in Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso. It was in that context that people decided that they need to walk away or break away from ECOWAS. And then when the crisis erupted in Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, the ECOWAS put some sanctions on each one of those three countries. So it was in that context that those countries that are looking for partners who can help them fight the terrorism. And then Russia again was going to become that country that always sides with the countries of the world that need freedom, or they want to fight, that are fighting for their sovereignty. So this is how Ben Traoré went to Russia, and then I gave a nice speech over there, and then he went again for the second time. And then we saw Vladimir Putin, who put his plane from Burkina Faso to Russia. So these are signs people saw, people appreciate. And then, so again, it is not that Burkina Faso and Mali and Niger have left ECOWAS to become member of the BRICS nations. They're dealing with individual countries like China, Turkey, and then Russia.
Now, you mentioned China, and I've often heard people who really don't have an understanding. They continue to say, oh, well, China, they're just trading one colonizer for another. And they say the same thing about Russia. But can you expand a bit on China's role?
China is the second most important economy of the world. So it is supposed to surpass the United States maybe in the next 20 years or so. Some people even say that it's going to be less than that. And China is doing economic diplomacy. This is what they do. They've been funding a lot of projects on the continent of Africa. And some people think that some of the loans that that China gives to those African countries, there are too many constraints that it's difficult to pay those loans back to China. And people think that this is a way of strangulating those countries. It's a way for China to maintain its dominance. And for people think that it's a method by China to exert its power and influence in the world. But many leaders welcome the projects that China is building. Railroad like in East Africa, so they welcome that, but at the same time, we don't see like a real engagement of with China, so that China can really help those countries foster and accelerate development.
I know that China has long had relations with various countries on the continent, going back even before the Bangdong Conference. And as with anything, there are some good deals and there are some bad deals. I know that in Zimbabwe, for example, there was a hospital that China had built in a number of years ago, and there are roads and things around transportation and even a move to develop tech cities. I think that's also a factor. That's also been a factor. Can you speak a bit about some of the development and partnerships?
In East Africa, for instance, China built a train, like a railroad station, and then that links, I think, Ethiopia to Kenya to Djibouti. And then the number, like, it's supposed to be like 7 hours. No, it was supposed to be like 10 days, but with that that line that they put together, so we can do like 10 days or like 10 hours. And then, so this is one of the things that the Chinese did in East Africa. So they have been multiplying like the construction of infrastructures. It can be roads, it can be railroads, and this is what they're doing. And that's one of the things that people welcome in Africa.
Now, we're going to take a musical break. And when we come back, I want to talk about Benin. There was an attempted to overthrow the government in Benin a few weeks back. And I want you to unpack that. I'm Fahima Sek, and the show is What's at Stake. My guest today is Dr. Yanka Lagoki, Associate Professor of History, Philosophy, and Religion with a focus on Pan-Africanism. And we are discussing a year in review on the African continent. And we'll be back on the other side of this.
We're moving right out of Babylon, and we're going to our father's land. Yeah, how good and how pleasant it would be before God and man. Yeah, to see the unification of all Africans. Yeah, as it's been said already. Yeah.
Back, that was Barb Marley with Africa Unite, and the show is What's at Stake, streaming at www.wpfwfm.org and 89.3 on your FM dial, and we also have the app, which you can get at the App Store, iOS, and also for Android. And my guest is Dr. Lagoki, and we were about to talk about Mali in terms of the attempted coup. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Not Mali. It was in Benin.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Mali
yeah.
was part but, of the Aligned State.
But Mali, even in Mali, based on the news that we are receiving, people are plotting in order to take Assimi Goïta out of power. So, but here we want to talk about Benin. Patrice Talon has been in power for 2 terms, and then he said that he was not going to run anymore. I think he chose one of his close allies in order to run for president, but he's still in power. And then we saw some soldiers who went there to try and overthrow him, as they say that many of the soldiers died on the battlefield. They don't have a sense of protection from the state, and because Benin also is threatened by the insurgents, Islamist insurgents. So that's the reason why they say they wanted to take him out of power. This is what I heard. And then so Nigeria, based on the news that we received, Nigeria supported Benin royal forces against those who started the mutiny. So and then Patrice Talon is still in power.
Well, speaking of Nigeria, as we look at, because we were going to talk about America's diplomacy and the current administration's focus on Africa, you mentioned Nigeria. Let's unpack the whole thing with this current administration's focus on Nigeria.
Yeah, so we heard the president of the United States who threatened Nigeria and said that Christians were being killed in Nigeria. And then we know Nigeria has been facing a threat from Boko Haram, which is a terrorist group. Also, we were surprised that Trump wanted to go and rescue the Christians. And people think that it was not so much about the Christians being killed, but it was more about Nigerians' oil. That was the interpretation of many. But I did the same thing with South Africa, where you think that the white South Africans are being killed by black people. And then many people think that it is a false accusation, and also it threatens South Africa.
Before you move on to, I want to talk a little bit more about Nigeria, because Tinubu actually has a history here in the U.S., actually in Chicago. Can you unpack that a bit?
Oh, yes. I'm not too familiar with the case, but he has a legal case. People say for money, drug-related money. This is what I heard.
Yeah.
And then, I don't even know if he can come to the U.S., but that was the case against him. He was accused of doing, I won't say money laundering, but he was doing drug. And then I think the American government wanted to catch him. So that is the story of Tinubu.
Yeah, well, he was identified as an asset in, I believe it was, one of those alphabet organizations. Well, because also, it's not on the continent, but Venezuela, it's not the Nigerian oil, and as well as Venezuela oil.
Yeah, definitely.
Oil has been the focus. That liquid gold has been the focus and really the motivation. So you started talking about South Africa. Let's continue with South Africa. Because you have the situation where Afrikaners were brought here to the U.S. Talk a bit about that. And also, you remember earlier this year, you had a situation where African leaders had an interesting visit at the White House.
Yes. So we are talking about South Africa. There was the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, was invited here in the United States to have a state visit or to have a visit for Donald Trump. So Donald Trump has a style. He meets his guests in front of journalists, and he talks to them as if, you know, he was the father, and as if, you know, no one can react to what he says. So they accused Ramaphosa of supporting the killing of white Africaners in South Africa. So it became a big debate. And then Ramaphosa did not fight back in the White House. The only thing he mentioned is that many of the news were fake news. So, but later on, Donald J. Trump decided that he was not going to attend the G20 meeting on the basis that South Africa, which was the host of that G20 meeting, was killing Afrikaners in South Africa. So people have, there are many Afrikaners who were invited to come to the U.S. To be migrants. So it looks like many of them are dragging their feet. And I even read one post in which an Afrikaner was saying that, was asking, if we go to the United States, can we still go back to South Africa in order to do vacation or something like that? People say, how so? How can you even talk about that? While you say that you were being threatened or because you were facing danger in South Africa. So that is the situation.
That's odd, because I've never heard of a refugee going back and vacationing in the country they were fleeing. So that's proof within itself that these people are not in danger. And I do understand that there were a number of Afrikaners who spoke out and said, you know, they're living quite well in South Africa. And had asked, you know, for this not to occur. And in fact, going back to that meeting, there was a member of the opposition party who was also present, who made it emphatically clear that these claims were false. The video that was played was actually not even from South Africa. So now let's talk a bit more about the G20, them being disinvited to the G20.
Yeah, so South Africa was holding the presidency of the G20. And South Africa organized that meeting, and Donald Trump decided to boycott the meeting. So when he decided to boycott the meeting, he wanted to even send like a low-level American official from the embassy of the United States in South Africa. So it became like a big discussion, big conversation online and between the two countries. And now Trump said that he was not going to invite South Africa because of the same narrative about killing white people when they organized a meeting in the United States, because America now is going to take the presidency of the G20. And Ramaphosa said that, you know what, we're going to suspend our membership in the G20. And then when America is no longer the leader of the G20, then South Africa intends to resume its membership in the G20.
So let's talk about this administration's focus on Africa in general and some of the things that have been going on, as far as you know.
Can we repeat the question? I'm sorry.
The diplomacy, this particular administration's focus on the African continent.
Yeah, so I don't even know if we can talk about Trump's diplomacy with Africa. I don't know if he has one, because in the beginning he was ignoring African countries. And now all of a sudden, he's caring about the Afrikaners in South Africa. He's caring about the Christians in Nigeria. And then he also brokered a peace deal between between Congo and Rwanda. So, you know, but this is something that we have to acknowledge.
But again, some of the conflicts that occur on the continent, the U.S. is directly involved in creating. So it's kind of contradictory. But can you delve in and unpack this supposedly brokered, the end of this conflict?
The between Congo and Rwanda?
Yes, go on.
Yes. So, yeah, so there is a continuous fight between the rebels, supposedly supported by Rwanda, in the eastern part of Congo, or in different parts of Congo. And Goma fell to the rebels. And but we know that Rwanda has been exploiting some of the resources of Congo. And the people think that the rebels who are doing the war are doing that, activated by the Rwandese president, Paul Kagame. So I don't know how he came to Donald Trump, but he decided to try and do everything possible to stop the conflict. So this one, that deal was brokered not long ago, and so people give him credit for that.
Do you have any insights in terms of what's going on in Somalia? Now, we know that this administration is attacking those Somalians, Minnesota, and that case actually was prosecuted earlier this year, and the ringleader was a woman, a Caucasian woman. But what is going on in Somalia right now? Because there are some issues that have been ongoing.
In Somalia, with the lady who's from Somalia. No, in Somalia, the lady who's from Somalia, like Trump accused her of having done something illegal when she was trying to have a green card.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about on the continent. We know that this administration has been attacking the congresswoman from Somalia. But I'm saying on the continent, there's some issues that are actually brewing right now. Are you aware of those?
In Somalia or in Sudan? It's in Sudan more.
Okay. Yeah unpack that for us.
Yeah. So in Sudan, after the fall of, there was a president who was in power, Bashir, who was taken out of power by a popular revolution. And then later on, faction of the army have been fighting against each other. It's a devastating war. And so people don't know how to make how to put an end to that war. So that is the war in Sudan. That's what I can say.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio WPFW 89.3 on your FM dial. The show is What's at Stake. And my guest today is Dr. Yanka Lugoki, Associate Professor for History, Philosophy, and Religion, with a focus on Pan-Africanism. And what we're doing is we're looking at the African continent. There have been for several years a great deal of enthusiasm about a number of the events that had been taking place on the continent. But as recent days, there have been some disappointments, if you will. But we continue to press on. Now, Dr. Lugoki, I want you to, in the time that we have remaining, to talk about what does it look like going forward? And again, viewing this from the lens of Pan-Africanism. Yeah, and anything else you may want to add.
Yeah, thank you very much. We started the show before the conversation about Pan-Africanism. So Africa is experiencing a golden age of Pan-Africanism. We spoke about that in the beginning with the Sahel state, with what is happening in Senegal, what is happening on the with each African country. For instance, Ghana in charge of reparation, Algeria in charge of reparation for the continent, and then Togo, which organized the Non-Pan-African Congress. So what I see is that there will be wars, there will still be wars on the continent of Africa, but there is an awakening of the African masses and the African leadership. And the Non-Pan-African Congress, for instance, was in the middle of a big controversy. Some people did not want the Congress to take place because they said that it was going to give credibility that the president of Togo was looking for. Some other people say, you know, it's an opportunity for us to gather. And it was a huge debate. In the central part of that debate was about Pan-Africanism. So the way forward, the reactionary forces will do everything possible to derail the revolutionary processes in many African countries. I think that the trend is towards the greater unity of the people and the greater unity of people of Africa.
Now, I know that the African Union is in Addis Ababa, and the UN is moving some of its operations back. And both entities, you know, for those who don't know, we're the those in us in the diaspora are the sixth region, if I'm not mistaken, yes, of the African Union. And the focus has been on reparations, as you mentioned. A lot of this comes out of the People's Permanent Forum of People of African Descent. Last year, they were in Geneva, Switzerland. This year, they were here in New York. They're going to be in Geneva next year. And I understand that those that are planning to attend the permanent forum of people of African descent, where the focus is on reparations, that they're going to try to make sure that the 2027 meeting is on the continent. Now, how are those efforts going as far as you know, in terms of the focus around reparations on a global aspect?
Yeah. So thanks. It is becoming like a huge, huge movement. The African Union gave the task Ghana to be the lead nation for reparation for people of African descent. It was a huge conference. I was there in November 2023. And now later on, the countries of CARICOM and the African Union, now they've been working now together because the goal in Ghana 2023 was to build a united front for reparation of Africa, for Africa and the people of African descent. And then now, like I said, the Pan-African Congress, which took place in Togo, they spoke about reparation. You know, so that you can see that Cam Howard, for instance, who has been working with NCOBRA He was one of the speakers there. So after that, we saw Algeria. As we know, Algeria and the Algerian revolutions that started on November 1st, 1954, inspired many freedom fighters on the continent of Africa. But what we see now is that Algeria decided to organize a conference on the crimes of colonialism. So to talk about reparation for Africa, but because of the ills of colonialism. So one of the elements that is very important, after 1958, under the leadership of Kwame Nkrumah or George Padmore, Pan-Africanism was deconstructed to integrate a multiracial dimension. So in 1958, the All African People's Conference, which took place in Ghana, we saw Black Africans, white Africans, and Arab Africans, and then Asian Africans coming together in order to strategize and fight for the decolonization of Africa. So with Algeria taking the role, champion for reparation because of the crimes of colonialism, it is going to give us the opportunity to see how in the 50s or in the early 60s, how Black Africa and Arab Africa they were working together. So this is what we are seeing. There's a strong possibility to see the resumption of the spirit of the All African People's Conference when blacks, whites, Arabs were fighting, working together.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with Mahmoud, the scholar Mahmoud Mandani, who's a professor at Columbia University, and his son is mayor-elect of New York City, and in a few weeks he'll have his inauguration. And he, a lot of people don't know that he is a professor of colonial studies. Are you familiar with Dr. Mahmoud Mandani?
Yes, I would say a lot, but yes, a little bit, because he's a great scholar who inspires many people about like some of the work that he put together, trying to revisit colonialism and the decolonization process. Yes, I'm familiar with his work. And then Zoran, that's the son, Zoran Mamdani, who became the mayor of New York, and then who, by the way, was given Kwame Nkrumah's name by his father. So Zoran is called Zoran Kwame Mamdani. Kwame is after Kwame Nkrumah. Yes, I'm familiar with the father's work.
Yeah, going back to the issue around Pan-Africanism on the continent. So you have a lot of these efforts, as you mentioned, the conferences that took place back a number of decades ago and efforts. And there has been a re-energizing of these efforts. You have I had the pleasure of attending the UN Conference Against Racism, where the People's Permanent Form of African Descent came about. Two things were part of the Durban Declaration. One, that slavery was a crime against humanity, and that we were a people of African descent. And subsequently, the diaspora became the sixth region of the African Union. And so although, there have been efforts to stall the progress, the work continues. As I mentioned, I think you indicated you were in Ghana when they had a conference several years ago. There was the conference that took place last year in Ghana. Yes. This year, they were here in New York. And the focus was actually AI and reparations. Presumably, there'll be a similar theme in Geneva, Switzerland next year. And CARICOM and all parties are at the table. So I am, even though, there have been efforts to thwart the movement around reparations, all hands are on deck. You have a number of local commissions, Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, Evanston, Illinois. There was a conference in Evanston, Illinois earlier this month, at the beginning of the month. So there are efforts. And I'm excited. I'm optimistic. I'm not involved with the reparations movement, but I've been observing it because at one point I was involved. Now, in terms of the continent, in the time we, because again, we're on the tyranny of the clock, the time we have remaining, what do you see happening around reparations on the continent?
What I said is that there will be more and more conversations on reparations on the continent of Africa. The leaders in Africa are newsmakers. So Togo organized the Non-Pan-African Congress. Reparation was in the central part of the conversation. Just to mention a few Americans, Black Americans who were there. Cam Howard is one of them. Camilla Move. She's a part of the California Task Force for Reparations. She was there too. So the bridge is being built between Africans, the people of African descent, around, you know, the question of the issue of reparation. So there will be more and more conversations and more fora, and then in order to raise the consciousness of many on the continent, in order for us to build a critical mass of people who can take the issue on the international stage in order to criminalize colonialism. And that was the conversation that took place in Algeria.
Well, I think that that's a good note to end on. And I want to thank you, Dr. Lagoki, for joining us today on What's at Stake. I want to thank our executive producer, Vern Avery Brown, Esther Viren for editing, and stay tuned for the next program and excellent programming throughout the rest of the day. And please, again, I want to remind you to remember your pledges, to honor your pledges, so that we can continue to bring you cutting edge information that you're not going to get in these times. For Pacifica Radio, I'm Fahima Sek.
Thank you.
On Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. From 9 a.m. until noon, we examine the Pan-Africanist legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. From noon until midnight, we center Haiti, her history, triumphs, troubles, and culture. That's Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist, MLK, and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings and happy holidays. The new year on WPFW will be celebrated in sonic bliss as some of your favorite programmers present the 2026 edition of New Year, New Jazz, our annual survey of the Jazz Year in Review 2025 on Thursday, January 1st from 5 a.m. until midnight. This day will present a delightful and potent mix of favorite 2025 jazz record releases, honoring jazz ancestors who passed in 2025, and music representative of our favorite 2025 DMV live jazz performances. That's Thursday, January 1st, 2026, New Year, New Jazz on WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. Don't sleep.
Inviting all DC hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
Thank you doesn't seem to be adequate. Your support is critical. Thank you, thank you, thank you again. We appreciate you partnering with WPFW and helping to make our end-of-year drive a success. If you would still like to support WPFW, make us stronger, it is never too late. Go to our website at wpfwfm.org. Thank you for considering WPFW in this season of giving. Wishing you and yours joy, love, and peace.
The Birchmere presents Derek Gripper and Balake Sissoko, January 14th. Avery Sunshine, January 17th. Will Downing, January 30th and 31st. And Babatunde Hip Hopra, February 1st. Details at birchmere.com.
Fellow members and supporters of WPFW, as you contemplate your year in giving, if you are required to take a minimum distribution from your IRA, please join many of our donors and make a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA to WPFW. A QCD can satisfy all or part of your RMD from your IRA, and you can exclude that amount from your taxable income. To learn more about these and other tax-wise giving methods, please visit our website or send us an email at plangiving@wpfw.org. And as always, thank you so much for your continued support.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and justice wherever you are.
This is a special invitation, a call for entries to We the 92%, an anthology of Black women's documenting this time. Your essays, poetry, prayers of resistance, open letters, and more. Preserving our voices, our truths, and our testimony in a time when our history is being rewritten, challenged, and erased are being accepted. Submission deadline is midnight, December 20th. Details at wethe92.com.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly five decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.